best that we can. Let me press the record button is on. Now, a few things in terms of protocol. Number one, please keep your device on mute. If you have a question, you can write into the chat and I will take questions at different points during the session. That's number one. Number two, we will be recording this. So if you miss something or if you feel there's someone who needs to know something, you could, we will send out the recording. Everybody will have access to it. There's also a written version of this material, which will be sent out through the shul. And number three, if you have questions after this, please feel free to reach out and I will try my best to answer your questions. I want to dedicate the shiur tonight for Fuash Lema, for two people in our community who have two extended members of our community who are sick right now with the virus, who need our need of healing, Michael Ben Lea and Hananya Lugasi Ben Deda. Hashem should send them a speedy recovery. Okay, let us begin. First of all, let's start with the following distinction. There's something called Bedikat Chametz, cleaning for Pesach, searching for Chametz, and there's something called spring cleaning. This Pesach we will be doing cleaning for Pesach. We're not going to be spring cleaning. If you find yourself on top of a ladder cleaning your roof, that is not cleaning for Pesach. That is spring cleaning. If you're scrubbing grout with a toothbrush, that is not cleaning for Pesach. That is spring cleaning. If you are moving all of the furniture in your house and the bookcases and everything, that is spring cleaning. That is not cleaning for Pesach. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Taf Kuf Kaf Tet Chayav Adam Yot Sameach V'Tov Lev B'Moed. A person should be happy on Yom Tov. If you want to take upon yourself to do spring cleaning, that's fine, but please do not impose this on others. Okay, we're here to fulfill the mitzvot of Pesach this year, all the more so than other years. We have to make sure that we are doing just what we need to do and not more, because we have limited energy and time. And it's important that we know what our basic, what our fundamental responsibilities are, and that we don't go above and beyond. Okay, first of all, let's talk about chametz. There are five mitzvot related to chametz on Pesach. Number one is that you're not allowed to eat chametz, even in a mixture. Number two, you're not allowed to derive benefit from chametz, which means you may not feed chametz to a dog. Lehavdil, you may not also give chametz to a non-Jewish housekeeper on Pesach. There are two other mitzvot lo taseh with regards to owning chametz. A person is not allowed to own chametz or have chametz in their possession. It does not mean that your housekeeper cannot have chametz. It has to be owned by you and in your premises. And number five is that we get rid of chametz. We destroy chametz. We take chametz very seriously. Chametz represents arrogance, boastfulness, the ego, the mentality of I am always right, having a bloated self-image. And because during the rest of the year, we have chametz. It's very much a part of our diet and our routine. Therefore, we go out of our way, specifically on Pesach, to get rid of every form of chametz. Now, there are two types of chametz. Chametz can come from, water, the mixture of water and flour from the five grains within an 18 cooking or baking for at least 18 minutes. There's also something called, one second, I see that someone is not muted here. Please, everybody, make sure to mute your devices. Okay. Adele, I'm muting you. Fred, I'm muting you. Everybody else is muted. Good. Okay, let's get back. So there are two different, there's chametz, regular chametz, which comes from water and flour mixing from the five grains. This does not include stuff from kitniot, things like legumes, which I gave a shiur about last week, which you can listen to very carefully. We don't assume that legumes leaven. They don't machmitz. If you take rice flour, it's not machmitz. If you were to take corn flour, it is not machmitz. It is not leaven. There's also seor. Seor is yeast. It's a fermenting agent. It's when we take chametz and let it sit for a while. Now, the same materials that we use to create chametz, we use to also make matzah. The five same grains, and this teaches us that you could use certain qualities or character traits for good, but also for bad. And this is true in every area of life. If you let chametz, if you let the mixture of dough and water cook for 18 minutes, or it could be even less than 18 minutes, if it's very hot, you start seeing cracks. This is the creation of chametz, and it is prohibited. How do we get rid of our chametz? There are three ways that we get rid of our chametz. Number one, we do bedikat chametz. We check for chametz. We physically go around the house and check for chametz. Practically, we often put out, you could start cleaning your house beforehand, but then we put out 10 pieces of bread just to make sure that we go out of our way to be able to find chametz, even if we weren't going to find small pieces in the crack somewhere. Number two, we do bitul chametz. We nullify chametz. We say it's nothing. It's worthless to me. It's ownerless. It's ka'afra de'ara. It's inconsequential to me. Why do we do both of these things? The truth is that the Gemara in Masechet Pesachim teaches us in Daf Dalet, bitul ba'alma sagilei, really you only need to do bitul chametz. But what's the concern? If you do bitul, and so you're, you know, in your mind, you conceptually, you've gotten rid of chametz, but then you find something. And we're concerned that then you're going to want to take hold of it. And the reason why we have to have bid, let's say you do bedika, so just do bedika, search it out. Well, the problem is that maybe certain things that you don't find, and therefore bid will cover those things. We also do a third thing, which is called mechirat chametz, selling our chametz. We try to make this as serious of a transaction as possible. And I already sent out a video for this year, which you could look at. The videos that I've sent you to your WhatsApp this year is, according to all opinions, you could sell chametz gamur. So if you have boxes of, and what I said is as follows, you have boxes of pasta in storage, rice, which is, by the way, you can hold on to kidney oat, no problem. But all these different products, which are chametz, which you might be keeping in storage just in case something goes wrong in the supermarkets, which thank God doesn't appear to be the case. You can sell all of these things. It doesn't mean you should have a small loaf of bread in your freezer. Get rid of that. Eat that up. Any you know, things in your pantry that you normally eat from, eat those crackers. Get rid of them. But things that you're keeping for storage, you can sell. We will be sending out a link and selling the chametz through the Rabbanut directly online. There will be no meetings in person. And this is because we are adhering 100% to the health ministry's guidelines, and we're trying to keep social distancing, so everything will be done online this year. We've already been in touch with the Iriya. The Iriya has a website that's going to be in Hebrew and also for English, and you could see the shtar from Rav Peretz, and you could sign and give everything, sell your chametz away. Okay, where do you need to check for your chametz? Now, this is very important, because some people think you need to check every single, you know, corner in your room. You got to check up in the attic, and you have to check behind the books, and you have to check in your garage, and you have to check in your machzan. You only need to check in places where it is likely that food was brought. This is written explicitly in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Taf Lamed Gimel, and you check where you think there might be chametz. There's not going to be chametz in your ceiling fan unless you were for some reason eating pretzels by your ceiling fan. So then don't check your ceiling fan. You don't need to clean your ceiling fan. If it's a place that you do not bring any food into, you do not need to check these places. Now, there is an important exception, and that important exception is for people who have young children. Like ourselves, we're blessed with three beautiful children who definitely bring chametz into every single place in the house where they can. And so the Mishnah Berurah points out in the same siman, this is in Taf Lamed Gimel, that you do need to check anywhere that a child might be able to bring food to. So Pesach cleaning is definitely easier for empty nesters. But here's a really important trick that you need to know about. Any area that you will not be using in your home, any area in your kitchen, any cabinet that you will not be touching, let's say you have a whole set of dairy dishes, all you need to do is take tape, close it up. You don't need to clean those dishes. You don't need to clean the cabinets. You don't need to get rid of anything in there. You're getting rid of it. You're not using it. You're selling any chametz that is in there. Put it away. Put away the toaster. Put away the mixer. Put away the things that you will not be using, and we'll talk about what those things will be. Put them away. Tape them up. You don't need to close, and you don't need to clean those cabinets. You only need to clean the areas of the kitchen, the areas in your pantry that you are going to be using. Otherwise, put tape on it, close it up, and you're good. Sandwich maker, put it away. You don't need to clean your sandwich maker before Pesach. If it has pieces of chametz on it, fine, but otherwise it's fine. You put it away, you close it up, and any chametz that's there is going to be sold. If you're going to be using shelves in your kitchen, so those shelves that you'll clean. Otherwise, again, just close it up and put it away. And this is the way to keep sane while preparing for Pesach. Now, it's also important to understand, when we do Betikat Chametz, we're looking for, this is also in Shulchan Aruch, Siman, Taf, Mem, Bet, we're looking for edible food that is a kezayit size. This is in terms of owning chametz over Pesach. When it comes to eating chametz, you can't eat anything. When it comes to owning chametz, it's about having a kezayit size, which is about 30 grams. If you're concerned that maybe something behind your oven and you don't want to move your oven, you could spray bleach there. And that makes the food, any crumbs, whatever it is that's there, totally inedible. No dog would eat it. It would be totally, no human being would eat it. It would be totally, it's not chametz anymore. It's just, it's just whatever. It's ke'afra de'ara. Okay, so this is in terms of vitikat chametz and bitul chametz. Does anybody have any questions at this point? If you have any questions, you could write onto the chat right now. Let's just see. Okay, let me just go through some of the questions quickly. Okay, so far. Let's run through the questions. One allowed to order from the supermarket chametz for after Pesach. I have delivery due after Pesach and don't know if I could order chametz. I'm going to recommend don't order food for during Pesach for after Pesach, because you have to pay with a credit card when you buy the chametz, and that means there could be some element of ownership. So better not to do that. How can we get a copy of the written material you mentioned that is going out to the shul? We will send it out via email as well as WhatsApp. So make sure to look out for the WhatsApps from the shul. Also, Tzohar Rabbis have a form on their site for selling chametz. You're more than welcome to use the Tzohar Rabbis website. That's fantastic. The Mo'atzah website will have the chametz selling form in English tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. Thank you, Matthew, and through Avdani, who helped to translate it. What about dog food? So that's a good point with regards to dog food. You may not benefit from chametz, which means that you have to make sure that you have kasher, the Pesach, dog food. I'm 100% certain that such a thing exists in this country, and you have to go to the store or order it and get kasher, the Pesach, dog food, or cat food, or fish food, whatever it is. Do we have to move the refrigerator and check behind there? Do you normally eat behind your refrigerator? Do you normally bring chametz behind your refrigerator? Sometimes you can get some chametz, crumbs under the refrigerator, but again, you wouldn't even need to look out for that, probably because they're not going to be big chunks, but obviously you're going to sweep there. You do not need to move your refrigerator in order to do betikat chametz. If you want to do spring cleaning, that's fine. You could do spring cleaning if you want, but we're talking here about betikat chametz. We're talking about getting ready for chametz, for Pesach. So if you want to remove the refrigerator, you can move the refrigerator, but at your own risk. What about tablecloths and towels for driving utensils? For driving utensils, we will get to that in a little bit. If we have sealed bags of flour, are these considered chametz? Problem with sealed bags of flour is that flour generally, it's washed with water, even though flour in of itself is not chametz. Flour needs to mix with water in order and then be cooked or baked in order to become chametz. Nonetheless, flour is often washed, and therefore there are concerns there might be chametz. So you could sell the flour this year. Any idea where you can buy betikat chametz kits at shops that sell are closed? Okay, so my recommendation for betikat chametz kits, you could just use a bag, use a flashlight or a candle, and you don't necessarily need a kit specifically for it this year, especially this year that it's closed. Good. Hagalah kelim, we're going to get to just a second. Cleaning ovens, we're going to get to. Okay, let's get back to our curriculum here. So let's talk about principles of kashering on Pesach. So imagine our only concern was that there were actual food, pieces of food on your dishes, okay? What would you do? You would clean off all the dishes, and then you'd use your regular dishes on Pesach. That would be very simple. However, we are also concerned with something called bliot. Bliot are food particles, chametz particles, that get absorbed into the walls of the pot. And it's taste, essentially. It's bliot, it's absorptions. And this is based on the principle ta'am ki'ikar, that the taste, that which is absorbed in the pot, has the same halachic status as the actual food itself that you'd have in your hand. How do things get into a pot? Things only get into a pot, they are transferred through heat. If something is never used for hot, you don't need to kasher it for Pesach. You made it to clean it out to make sure there's no chametz inside of it. But I'll just give you an example. It's like classic example. You go to a hotel, not on Pesach. You go to a hotel, okay? And certainly not on this Pesach. You're going to a hotel. You want to have your cereal and milk. You're having cold cereal with cold milk, and there's a bowl in the hotel room. You may 100% use that cold bowl and have your cereal milk. It's all cold. And you see that there are no pieces of pig inside the bowl, and so you're totally fine. And there's no concern. If you were using it to make to heat up a soup or to make oatmeal, that might be a problem. And we'd have to check that. Now, so something gets absorbed into the walls of the pot. Okay. But after 24 hours, we assume that the taste, the bliot, the tam in the walls becomes pagum. It becomes nifsal. It's no longer has a positive taste. And therefore, this is another very important halachic question, which comes up all the time, and it's the most basic halachic question in kashrut. Let's say I accidentally, heated up my macaroni and cheese in a meatball in the microwave. Am I allowed to eat the macaroni and cheese? Am I allowed, or what do I do with the bowl? Okay, so it's very simple. Okay, if this was after 24 hours, if the last time you used the bowl was before 24 hours, it means the taste in the walls of the meat bowl are pagum, and therefore you're not creating basar b'chalav, a mixture of meat and milk, and therefore you may eat that food. However, Chazal, the rabbis, made a takana, they made a gzera, that you still would have to kasher that bowl. You could eat the food, but you need to kasher the bowl. If you mixed it up and you put macaroni and cheese into a meatball, and the reason is because we're concerned that you're going to start mixing up dishes that didn't get to the 24-hour period, that don't have tam pagum, with those that already do. And then you'll end up using dishes within the 24-hour period for macaroni and cheese. You'll use a meat dish, and this is going to be a problem. Now, in theory, this means that you could live in a Jewish 100% kosher home with one set of dishes and just switch off every 24 hours. This is, in fact, what one of the Rishonim, by the name of the Ra'ah, this is what he used to do. But you can imagine this is very confusing, and Chazal recommend against this. This is why we have two sets of dishes. So another thing that's just important to be aware of is that soap, sabon, makes taste ta'am pagum. The more soap you use, the more likely, if you have any accidents in the kitchen, that it's that's fine. For example, let's say you accidentally throw a dairy spoon into a dishwasher when the dishwasher is clean. Your dishwasher is used for meat, but there's soap, there's sabon, and therefore there's no transfer of taste because the sabon also makes the taste in the different bliot. It makes it pogame. It makes it defective. Now, here's the key thing. There's a big difference between Pesach and the rest of the year, because in the rest of the year, in principle, meikar hadin, the taste in the walls is pagum after 24 hours. It's pagum. And it's actually totally fine to use, and it's batel berov. There's majority of let's say you end up eating something in that pot. The majority of the food that you've put in macaroni and cheese definitely outweighs by 51% whatever's in the walls of the pot, and so you don't have to make karadin. It's totally fine. However, again, we kasher because of the rabbis. However, on Pesach, you have to kasher because the taste never becomes batel on Pesach. Why? Because on Pesach, chametz is never batel. It's not even batel b'mashu. Even if you have a little chametz, you could have 7,000 times the amount of matzah, and you have a little chametz in there. It's never batel. Taste is never batel on Pesach. It's isur bala. It's a very severe prohibition, and therefore one has to kasher their dishes, and one needs to get things out of their dishes that they want to use on Pesach itself. So here's the question. How do we get the taste out of the dishes? How do we get the taste out of the dishes? How do we get the tam out? And there's a very basic principle. This principle is called kibol o kach polto. The way that something is absorbed, that is the way that you remove the taste. The way it goes in the way is the way that it goes out. So for example, if I cook, let's say I'm cooking a soup, and I put in my soup, there are grains and there are oats in my soup, or I'm making oatmeal, for example, and now I'm using water. There's a medium of water, and therefore the oatmeal, the oats, gets absorbed into my pot, okay? So that's through the medium of water. So we're going to have to get rid of it through the medium of water. Okay. And that's called a Kli Rishon. A Kli Rishon is something that, a Kli Rishon is a pot that's sitting on hot water and you need it on the fire, on the flame, and you need to get rid of this, of the chametz that's in the walls also by using water from a Kli Rishon. Now there are some things that are absorbed through direct heat. For example, let's say I cook a kugel in a tavnit, in a dish, in a tray in the oven. There's direct absorption from the kugel. Or maybe I'm making a knish. There's direct absorption from the walls of the tavnit, the knish into the walls. That's direct heat. That's going to require something called libun, okay? Sometimes we have absorption through steaming. A microwave uses steam. Steam expands and goes into the walls of the microwave, so we will use steam to remove whatever chametz particles are in there. And sometimes things, they don't even get absorbed. They're just used for cold. And in that case, we're just going to do shtifa. We're just going to clean it. So let me tell you about the two primary ways in which we do hachsharat kelim. One of them is called hagalah. The other one is called libun. Now, after we're done with this session here, the teaching part, we're going to take you into our kitchen. We're going to do a live tour of the kitchen and go through different objects in the kitchen and show you how to do hagalah. Okay, so at the end, I will do a tutorial. Again, all of this is going to be saved on video and on audio, so you can look at this afterwards if you need to. I'm going to take questions in just a second. I just want to explain what hagalah and libun is. These are fundamentally different things. Hagalah is essentially what we're going to do is we're going to take a big pot. We're going to fill it up with water and we're going to dip. Let's say I have a fork that I want to use on Pesach. I'm going to put the fork inside the hot pot, which is on the water and boiling water. I'm going to put soap inside. This is after I wait 24 hours. Okay, that's hagalah. Hagalah is about removing the bli'ot, that would the taste that is in the walls of the pot. Libun is not about removing and extracting what's in the walls. Libun is about destroying. You're destroying with a blowtorch or with a fire, okay, until you see white sparks coming out. An example of libun is a self-cleaning oven. We do have a lesser form of libun called libun kal. That's a lower heat in which you like heat something basically until a point where paper would burn on top of it. And we'll talk about libun kal and when libun kal may be used instead of libun chamor. But these are the two primary things that we're going to do. Libun, generally, it's just to be aware, we don't do libun all that much today. Maybe if you go to the Rabbanut is probably not even doing Hashara Kelim this year. We're going to figure out what they're going to do. Libun, you need to use a blowtorch. I remember in the army when on Pesach, a bunch of rabbis came for like 6 hours. It was like 6 days before Pesach. So we were ready for Pesach. 6 days. We're eating matzah in the army 6 days before Pesach. I kid you not. We ate a lot of matzah that year. And what they did is they kashered everything and they did libun. They had this huge blowtorch and this huge vat for Hagalah. This is what they do with the Rabbanut as well. It is not recommended to be doing libun at home. We'll talk about in what context you can do it. Okay, so let's talk about what you can do hagalah on. Okay, so again, you're taking this big pot, you're heating it up on the fire, you put some soap into this big pot, it's boiling hot, okay, and then you take your dishes and you put them inside. Now, a person needs to be careful. You have to be careful when you do this. It's good to have tongs in order to be able to extract things out. And we'll talk about each step as we go do it practically in the kitchen. Let's go through the different objects in your kitchen that you may use Hagalah for, that you could kasher using Hagalah. Then we're going to move on to Shtifa. Then we will move on to Libun. Okay, so I'm just going to look at a few questions in the chat. Okay. We'll get to drying towels. Towels for drying utensils, we will get there, but you will be able to just throw them in the laundry. That's a way that you could use towels, even ones that you use during the year. Bior chametz this year, Rashi's question. We will not be doing I don't know what they're going to do in the Rabbanut yet, but I'm strongly recommended, even if they have it, no one should go to a communal burning for chametz. We will do one of two things. You could flush things down the toilet. You could eat the chametz. Or you could put it into the garbage. Rav Moshe Paskins, that putting something in the garbage is a sign that it's hefker to you and that you don't own it anymore. and this is what we will do. And if you're concerned, oh, you know, maybe you still think you own it, well, you could throw some detergent on it. And that's what we will do this year for Biur Chametz. How to deal with it with a car that is full of smushed pretzels. We have no vacuum cleaner, almost impossible to get it all out. Not sure if we can borrow at this point. One should check whether there are places where you could vacuum the car. There are places, there's a gas station by the Canyon where you could clean your car. You could also maybe borrow a vacuum cleaner from us. If you want to, you could borrow our vacuum cleaner. We have one which could be used for cars. Does the pot need to be a new pot or a kosher le Pesach pot? Excellent question. This is an excellent question. I want to focus on this for a second. This is Misha's question to everybody. One is two options. You can use a pot that was already kashered for Pesach. We happen to have a huge, very big chicken pot, which we use each year. You do not have to use a pot that was made specifically for Pesach. You could use a pot that has not been used in the last 24 hours. Just make sure you have not used a pot in the last 24 hours, and you could use that to kasher everything else for Pesach. Okay, there are more kashering video tutorials from the Chicago Rabbinical Council, the CRC website. The CRC is an excellent resource that you can use to find out information about Pesach, so make sure to look there. What can you not kasher for Pesach? We will talk about what you cannot kasher, but the biggie, the big thing that you're not going to be able to kasher for Pesach are things that are made out of clay or porcelain or enamel, okay? These are materials that generally cannot be kashered. We even paskin, most poskim say, even things that have glaze on top of them, we assume that they are determined by the clay, okay, that is beneath them or whatever it is. So anything that's kli cheres, you are not able to kasher for Pesach, but there will be other things as well. We're going to talk about glass and glass dishes and cups. Does the pot for Agala need to be a kosher for Pesach pot? The answer is no, as I just wrote. You could use any pot as long as you have not used in the last 24 hours. Okay, let's get back to this. So let's start with things that you were going to use for Hagala. Okay, now of course, you could always buy new pots this year. That's always an option. It may not be easy to get new pots. I do know, for example, at Supersalt that they have pots right when you walk in on the left side of the mall. So you can buy new things. And I sent out a video about what to do with regards to tefillat kelim, toveling your dishes. So number one, what can you do Hagala on? You could do Hagala on silverware. You could do Hagala on a pot. You could do Hagala on a thermos. Okay. Let's say you have a very big pot and you know you want to kasher it or you don't know what to do with it. So you can, but you want to kasher it. So what you can do is you can, you could fill it up until it gets, it's overflowing essentially with water. And then you put another pot with hot water in it until it overflows on the sides. That will kasher that pot for you. Let's talk about other materials besides for metal. Can you kasher plastic? Rav Moshe Feinstein was against kashering for plastic because he believed that any chemically made objects, we treat just like clay, just like kli cheres, and one is not allowed to kasher kli cheres. Why you're not allowed to kasher kli cheres? Because we assume that things get absorbed into the clay, but you can't get them out. Why can you get them out? Because you're going to have to use the same process that is used to make it, and that would require putting it into a stone fire, and it's going to destroy your kli cheres. So you cannot kasher anything that's clay. Rav Moshe says you cannot kasher plastic. However, most poskim say you can kasher plastic by putting it into, by doing Hagala. So you may kasher plastic. Okay, this year, one thing that comes up are kids' plastic bottles. You may kasher kids' plastic bottles. It's good to find, if you can find substitutes, buy new ones, that's great, or have special for Pesach. But if not, then you can kasher your kids' plastic bottles. Just make sure that they won't get ruined when you heat them in the, and when you do Hagala on them. Okay, let's talk about countertops. Okay, now what happens with your countertop? And what actually, how do you even have heat on your countertop? I don't cook on my countertop, we cook by the fire. So what happens on a countertop? On a countertop, the only concern is actually that hot water was poured. Let's say hot chametz, I'm making oatmeal, and the oatmeal gets poured onto the counter somehow. Okay, so that's called irui. Kli Rishon. That's something that's poured out from something that was on the fire. And Irui Kli Rishon only requires that you pour hot water onto the countertop. Now, there are those who are, the Mishnah Brura mentions a chumrah, a stringency. That what are we concerned about? That on a countertop, you may have had a chunk of very hot chametz. Let's say you had meatballs with some flour in the meatballs, and the meatball falls onto the countertop, and it's just like a kli rishon. Okay, and therefore the Mishnah Brura has this chumrah that not only do you need to pour hot water onto the countertop, you also need to have what's called an evan miluban, a hot stone which you're moving around at the same time. Okay, we don't do that in our homes today. Not only is it dangerous, no kashrut organization demands this. What we're going to do on the countertops is one of two things. Okay, we're going to pour, we're going to do hagala from the tea kettle onto every single spot on the countertop. You have to make sure that it hits every single spot on the countertop. You can't just let it run down. It has to hit directly. It's a very messy business, by the way. This is after not using hot things on your countertop for 24 hours. There are some who are stringent or machmir to cover instead. And some do both. Some do irui, some pour water and they cover. You don't have to do both options, but you can. There are those who are sometimes concerned that something's going to get destroyed. They don't want to destroy their marble with hot water. So then you can cover, okay? So this is what's recommended to do. Now, what about other materials besides for stones? What about synthetic stones? What about Caesar stone, formica? Can we kosher these things? Now, Caesar stones and other composite stones, they're glued together with glue, which is a form of plastic. Those who follow the Shita of Moshe, say that you cannot kasher this. However, the classic position is that one can kasher these things, and therefore one can use hagala, one can pour hot water from their tea kettle onto the countertops and clean the countertops. Again, the countertops need to be totally clean. You're cleaning everything off from them. You're not using them for 24 hours with anything that's hot. This is true for Caesar stone, for formica, for granite, for marble. You can kasher all these things using hagala. You may not kasher porcelain. If you have porcelain, you may not kasher those things. Okay, or anything that's clay. Again, that's made of clay, enamel, whatever it is. So this is with regards to countertops. This is the fifth thing that we use hagala to kasher. Let's talk about a table. Okay. Again, the table, there's a concern, perhaps that a kli rishon, that the a meatball falls from the pot, it falls onto the table, it's burning, it's sizzling hot, it has flour in it, and so you've had a transfer from a kli rishon of chametz right onto your table. Now, very often with a table, which is made out of wood or glass, you may not want to pour hot boiling water onto that. So the best thing to do, Rav Eliezer Melamed suggests, you should clean it, cover it, put a tablecloth on top, unless your table can withstand the Irui Kli Rishon. Some people have marble tablecloths, and just like they pour onto their marble, so they pour on the kitchen, the countertop, they also pour on the table. Again, you should know what's going to happen to your countertop if you pour hot water on it. I don't want anyone to come back and say, oh my God, I destroyed my countertop because of this. Make sure you know what you're getting yourself into, and you could speak to others who have had some experience doing this. I know for us, we have a composite stone. We've koshered it with Hagalah, with Irui, and it works, and nothing gets destroyed. Okay, I'm going to take some questions at this point. Okay, we're going to get to, water bottles. Maggie Sandler's question. Why do water bottles have to be kashered if it's used for cold? You're right. They probably don't need to unless you're putting them in the dishwasher, in which case they have some absorption from heat. Or if you're using hot water, very hot water to clean them, that's beyond Yad Saletet Bo, which is like 112 degrees. But otherwise, if it's just being used with mother's milk, it would not need to be kashered. Can you use steam to clean the countertops instead? This is a very important question. Rav Moshe Feinstein was against using steam to clean the countertops. And the reason is because he feels that steam is not the same thing as a direct medium of hot water, which is essentially what you want to try to accomplish here. There are some industrial steamers in which it's not just steam that comes out. It's really there's this water that's coming out at the same time. One is allowed to use those types of steamers. I'm not sure if you'll be able to find something of that sort. For sure you could use steam for a microwave because steam, or Moshe felt you could use steam for a microwave because a microwave uses steam. Again, if you have an industrial steamer, you could use it, but one of these steamers, like what you use to iron your clothing, you would not be able to use. And I heard from one rabbi a very interesting suggestion. Someone could probably make a lot of money creating a steamer special for Pesach. So if anybody wants to take up that idea, feel free to do so. So can you steam clean the countertops? Can you kasher karel? Can you kasher karel? I'm going to get back to you on that one, Mark. I don't think so. I think karel is also a form of... Well, I want to get back to it. I don't want to answer that question without having more information. Can a glass table be just cleaned with a chemical product? No, a glass table really needs to have water poured on top of it because we're concerned, again, that hot chametz may have fallen on it. So if you want to pour hot water on it, you're welcome to do that, but otherwise you should cover it. Do we need a kosher hot water one? We will get to in just a little bit. Dishwasher, we will get to in just a little bit. Baking pans, we will get to in just a little bit. Okay, let's move on. Tov, let's talk about the sink. Okay, now the sink in general is a little bit less stringent because there is soap, which is used all the time. And so any tastes which get, you know, absorbed into the walls, there's soap on a regular basis, and it's going to, for the most part, prevent absorption. If you have, it really depends what type of, what material your sink is made out of. If your sink is made out of kli cheres, out of clay or enamel or porcelain, you are not able to kasher it. If it's stainless steel, you certainly can kasher it. Again, you'll use hagalah to pour on every single part of the sink. You'll clean it first, of course, not use it 24 hours. Then you'll pour it on every part of the sink. However, so that's one option. There are those who are machmir and they use plastic bowls in the sink and they don't want to use hot water. This is based on a chumrah of the Rama. And so you have these two options. You could either clean out the sink or you can cover it by using plastic bowls in the sink, inserts that protect anything that you're cleaning on Pesach from the bottom of your sink. In terms of sink accessories, you should also do hagalah, also pour water on the faucet, make sure it's also clean. You could do hagalah on the drain as well, clean it out, the drain, and do hagalah, or you could swap it and get a Pesach, kosher for, you know, a new one for Pesach. And in terms of racks, also one can swap them, but if not, you could do hagalah on them. Now, an important point in terms of hagalah, you don't have to fit the entire object into your pot at the same time. You could do it in parts, but a rack is a pretty big thing, and it's unlikely that you're going to have a pot big enough to kasher a rack, so you're probably going to have to get different racks for Pesach. That's in terms of sink accessories. Now, let's talk about a dishwasher. Okay, there are some who are machmir, that you really, let's talk about it. What happens in a dishwasher? So in a dishwasher, you have a dishwasher is like a kli rishon. Water is heated up inside of it, or at least this is one understanding of what happens in a dishwasher. There are different types of dishwashers. In some dishwashers, it's like a kli rishon. Water is heated up in the dishwasher, and therefore any gook or any food that's in there is going to get absorbed into the walls of the dishwasher and into the racks. And the problem is that you can't do hagalah on a dishwasher. I can't take my whole dishwasher, turn it inside out, and put it into a hot pot of boiling water on my flame. So therefore, you would have to do hagalah with an evin miluban, which is this chumra mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah and the Rama. You have to take this hot stone, and this is basically impossible to do. However, there are those who are lenient about dishwashers, and they argue that, first of all, many dishwashers are really in like an irui kli rishon. Water is heated up outside of the dishwasher and spritzed inside the dishwasher. And so it's sort of a derivative of a kli rishon. It's called irui kli rishon. And there's another theory that kibolo kachpolto, and that just you could basically kasher the dishwasher at the same heat that it's used to absorb heat in the sides of the walls. So there are many who are against kashering dishwashers because you literally would have to take out every single piece of the dishwasher. You have to clean all the crevices. You got to take out all the parts. There's a lot of gook in there that need to be cleaned very well in tubes. So if you're going to do that, you have to be careful about this. However, if you want to kasher your dishwasher, poskim like Rav Eliezer Melamed say that you can do, basically what you do is you clean out your dishwasher really, really well. All the gook gets out. You wait 24 hours. Okay. And then you put a lot of, soap in and you run a cycle, the hottest cycle, the longest cycle. And with the racks inside, alternatively, one can switch the racks. And then you could use your dishwasher on Pesach. Okay. So this is, there are some who are lenient. There's some who are strict about dishwashers on Pesach. Let's talk about something else that you could do Haggadah with. If you have an espresso or Keurig machine, coffee maker. Okay, for this, clean it well. Don't use it for 24 hours. Remove the K-cup holder, the piece that holds, you know, that the coffee cup. Do Haggadah. Take those pieces. Do Haggadah on those things. And then you run a kosher LePesach cup through the machine. And it's all kosher. And you could use your Keurig Nespresso machine on Pesach. Let's talk about an urn, okay? And then afterwards, I'll take some more questions. An urn. An urn, in theory, there's a concern. Maybe some chametz fell inside the urn. And this is a kli rishon. This is a classic kli rishon. It's like water being boiled on the fire. So you have to do Haggadah, which means, in this case, boiling water in inside and then letting the water pour out, you know, boiling water all the way to the top. And you clean it out, especially from the white residue. Let the water boil inside and then pour it out through the spout. And that will clean out the urn. You could throw in some soap if you want to. In terms of the lid, people sometimes put challah on the lid, okay? Or they put other kugel on the lid on Shabbat. And there might be the concern about some absorption. So you have to do Haggadah on the lid as well. So throw the lid into, do Haggadah on the flame. Okay, I'm going to take some questions now before we move on to the next section here. Okay, spoke about dishwashers. We spoke about steaming. We talked about, so Harry Glaber, your question, do we need a kosher hot water urn and kumkum for Pesach? You should. Okay, heat it up, as I just said. How do you clean dishwasher? We spoke about. After you do Haggadah, do you need to then put the item straight into cold water? Yes, this is ideal. It is ideal to put things in cold water afterwards. It's not me'akev. If you didn't do it, everything is still fine, but it's a good thing to do. Is Simon Cohen, is that the same for the trays in a dishwasher? If the trays are made of plastic, is that not unkosherable? Okay, so I mentioned this earlier, if Moshe Feinstein is against koshering plastic, most poskim believe that you can kosher plastic, and that's the shita that I generally recommend. That's the majority opinion. Grates for the oven, Rashi, we'll get to the grates. And there's oven in just a little bit. Can you clarify the porcelain sink? We'll need to use a plastic basin. Yes, if you have a porcelain sink, you will need to use a plastic basin because there is absorption in the walls. If this absorption cannot come out, because you'd have to, we assume things don't come out of porcelain or of clay, and therefore you have to use sink inserts if you have a clay sink. If you have a granite sink, can you not use it for 24 hours before Haggadah? So you can't use it for 24 hours for hot. If you're using it for cold, it's fine. The concern is that you're using it for hot. Again, if you're being very careful and you're only using, vegetables, let's say, and you're sure you're not using chametz or anything of that sort, it should be fine as well. But we're talking about using the sink for heat for 24 hours before. By the way, important idea. Okay, when's the best time to do kashering? Can anybody tell me when is the best time to kasher your kitchen? Anybody want to take a guess? So here's one suggestion. You could do it on Motzei Shabbat, because after Shabbat, you haven't used your oven, you haven't used your dishwasher, you haven't used your urn, you haven't used any of these things for 24 hours, and therefore it's built in. It's a built-in time to that gives you. Now, in this case, it's going to be 3 days before Pesach. Some people might not be that want to kasher, so early. I will just say, do not leave this all to Tuesday night. Really strong recommendation. Do not leave this to Tuesday night. Try to at least move it a day forward. If you're going to eat more matzah because of that, sorry, you can't eat matzah, but if you have to eat some Pesach food and, any bread outside of your house or on your mirpeset, so it's worth it. It's not worth having to stress before. We're going to get to a plata in just a minute, Maggie. Okay, let's move on. Now we're going to talk about things that just require shtifa. Shtifa is just cleaning things, okay? These are things that there's no absorption of heat. So number one, the fridge. fridges used for cold. So all you need to do is clean it. You have to clean it well. Very often there's gook and stuff all over your fridge. Clean it well. It might be a nice idea to symbolically to cover the fridge. But after cleaning it, but one is not required to do that. And you also need to make sure that you get rid of breadcrumbs in the freezer. Very often, the freezer, like there's this frozen over chunk of ice that has bread in it from the challah that you had from 3 Shabbatot ago. And it's all there. You have to defrost the stuff. You have to clean out the drawers in the freezer. It's very critical. Number two thing that you would just need to clean and not do hagalan is your dentures or a retainer. Okay. We don't assume that people pour, you know, really hot water chametz into their mouth. For a retainer, you could clean it well. If you want to do hagala, some say you could do hagala, so then you could do hagala on it, but you don't want to ruin your retainer. So be very careful about that, but cleaning it is just fine. Let's talk about glass dishes, okay, for a second. So let's see, I just want to see by show of hands, let's say you have a glass dish that you use during the year. Can you use your glass dishes on Pesach? If you think the answer is yes, show me a thumbs up. Can you use your glass dishes on Pesach? Okay. Who thinks that you're not allowed to use your glass dishes on Pesach? Let me see any thumbs down. Do we see any thumbs down here? Okay. Tov. So here is the issue with dishes. The reason I put this under the category of shtifa is, well, there's a big machloket here between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. Okay, what is the status of glass in general? So glass, Sfaradim argue, the Shulchan Aruch rules in Siman Taf Nun Aleph, Seif Kaf Vav, that glass never absorbs anything. It is shi'i. It is it's impenetrable to absorption. There are no bli'ot. There's no taste that can get into glass. There are some Sfaradim or Machmir, the Ben Ish Chai, for example, but most Sfaradim are not Machmir, and therefore you could use glass for meat, for milk, Pesach, non-Pesach. You could use glass forever. You could have one set of dishes, essentially, and use it all the time. There would be no absorption. However, when it comes to Ashkenazim separate, they distinguish between during the year and the rest of Pesach, according to some opinions like the Aruch HaShulchan. But let's just say the classic Ashkenazi opinion on Pesach is that glass is treated like it's made out of sand. And sand is like essentially like clay. It's klicheres. It comes from the ground. And therefore, we assume it is bolea. Things get absorbed into it, but things do not come out from it. And therefore, Ashkenazim are machmir, like the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah, not to use glass dishes. And you also obviously can't kasher them either because they might break. So one is not able to use glass dishes that they have during the rest of the year on Pesach. This includes Pyrex and Duralex, which are very strong forms of glass. And so unless it's Shad Hadchak, unless you have no other options, maybe you don't have any other options, and this might be the case this year. So please reach out to me if you want to talk about this. There are some who are leaning. The Titz Eliezer, for example, says that, for Pyrex, you could do Hagalah, three times on this, clean it, not use it 24 hours, and you could use Pyrex, according to the Titz Eliezer. But generally, Ashkenazim do not use glass that they use during the year, Pyrex, Duralex, any of these things. So this is in terms of glass, Sfaradim use it, Ashkenazim do not. Okay, let's see just some questions. Depends if you use, 1 second. How about soaking for 3 days and changing the water? Okay, so soaking for 3 days, milui v'iruri, is really for something that's kavush kimavushal. Something soaks in water. But soaking for 3 days, we'll talk about, there's some cups, some drinking cups that are made out of glass that you may be able to just soak for 3 days. Well, we're going to get there right now. But now we're talking about things that you cook in. Pyrex or dishes that you eat hot food on. You have a plate and you had a really hot, hamburger on it, or you had hot chametz. You had a cheese sandwich. Okay. So this is in terms of, by the way, Rav Avadia Yosef rules that an Ashkenazi who moves to Israel can do Hatarat Nedarim and follow the Shita of Rav Avadia Yosef and then use glass on Pesach. For those who follow Revadio Say for Everything, you're welcome to follow this opinion. We could talk about it if that's if you're one of those people, but there are very few people who I know who are like that. Let's move to glass cups themselves. Okay, now if you think about it logically, a glass cup is, maybe you use it for tea or for coffee, but when do you ever put like hot chametz into a glass? But there is a concern, and that is a concern that maybe you put whiskey into the glasses. Now, here's the question. How much do we need to be concerned that you may have put whiskey? Whiskey is chametz gamur, okay? That you may have put whiskey or beer in a cup, okay? Let's say I only used a cup for whiskey once out of the whole year, and I use the cup every single day of the year. So most of the time, there's no whiskey in it. I'm just using it for orange juice or apple juice or water, whatever it is. So this is another machloka between the Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. The Shulchan Aruch says that we go by Rov Tashmisho. We follow the majority way in which a cup is used. A cup is generally not used for beer or for whiskey. So all you need to do is take your cup, clean it out, just like with some soap, whatever it is, and you could use it on Pesach, no problem, even if you did use it for beer or for whiskey. The Ramah is machmir, he's stringent, and he says that you go by the most stringent form of use. If you may have used beer or whiskey, and these things can be bolea, they're considered davar harif in a sense, they could be bolea according within even 18 minutes into the glass. However, it's important to understand that the Ramah does not include these two stringencies together. What do I mean? He does not combine two stringencies. He does not combine the stringency of glass cups and the most stringent form of usage of a dish. What does this mean practically? Practically, it means that you don't really need to kasher your glasses for Pesach. Okay? Meikar Hadin and Ashkenazi can use glass cups on Pesach. And this year, there's a little bit more room to be lenient if you have no other options. Okay? That's in terms of this year. You could use kasher. You could use your glass cups on Pesach. There are those who are stringent within this mindset and do milui ve'irui. Milui ve'irui is that you take your glass cups, you put them in water for 24 hours, then you switch the water. You put them in another pot of water, not hot, just like sitting in the bathtub for 24 hours, a third time, 24 hours. People from the old country, from Europe, used to do this. It's not as common today, but if one wants to be a little bit more stringent and use their glass cups this year, that's your option. That's option number two. The Mishnah Berurah does mention that it's ideal to get a second set of drinking glasses, for Pesach. If you have that at home, great. If you have the ability you could afford it, or you have access to the store to buy it, fine. If you want to do that, it's fine. Meikar Hadin Ashkenazim this year can use glasses that they use throughout the rest of the year for Pesach. Now, this excludes whiskey glasses because those their Rov Tashmisho is going to be used even if their glass is for whiskey. This excludes if you have like a special beer cup that you like to use for those who attend Shir and beer. I don't know. Maybe they have cups that they use all the time just for beer. I would recommend that not using that as well. And obviously this doesn't apply to anything that's made out of clay, porcelain, enamel. Those would also be, we're not going to kasher those things or use them. But glass cups for Ashkenazim, cups you may use. Plates, no. Pyrex, no. Again, unless it's Shadat Chak and you have no other options, but there's always aluminum but if you don't have any other options, we will talk. Let's talk about, your case of Pyrex or Duralex. You can, in certain circumstances, use it, and please reach out to me if you have questions about that. I'm going to do one more short topic, and then I'll take some more questions. Kiddush cups. Okay, so a Kiddush cup made out of metal, there might be whiskey in it. So Ashkenazim would say you have to do Hagala on it. So you got to dip it in boiling hot water. For Sfaradim, you could just clean them, because Rov Tashmisho, the majority way in which you use a Kiddush cup, is for wine. And wine is not chametz. Maybe you put in whiskey once in a while, but that's any whiskey drinker who knows anything about drinking whiskey will tell you that you don't put whiskey into metal cups. It's just not the best way to drink it. So that's in terms of all the things that require shtifa, and that require just cleaning out. So I'm going to take some questions. So Simon, we got to your question about soaking for 3 days and changing the water. That does include glasses as well. That's Jake Jax's question. Stop eating chametz in your office, Rabbi. I'm being told by somebody. Okay, that's right. We have to clean out. I hope I don't have any chametz in the office any at this point. How about glasses for hot tea? Glasses for hot tea. Again, you can. You know, the truth is, Beinenu, between all of us here, the glasses for hot tea, you could do hagala on it. Okay, I don't think they're gonna. The ones that are made for hot tea are not gonna get destroyed if you put them in a kli rishon. But again, meikar hadin, you could use it because rov tashmisho. It was not for chametz, and tea is, again, it's most likely not chametz either. Can we kasher a Shabbat platter? We're going to get to just a little bit. Daniel Orkin just wrote to me, yay for Sfaradim. Daniel, I look forward to seeing you at Slichot all 40 days this coming Elul. So, okay, let's continue. Let's talk about things that require libun chamur, libun gamur. Libun, again, is not when you're extracting the absorptions in the walls. Libun is when you use a fire, use a blowtorch, because there's direct absorption into the walls of something. Okay, so let's talk about, there are going to be some things that we don't do libun on, that we're just not going to use, we're going to put away, we're going to tape it up and not use it for Pesach. First of all, a toaster. A toaster needs libun gamur. I don't recommend blowtorching your whole toaster. So you're going to put it away. You know, and you're not going to kasher it for Pesach. You're not going to be using your toaster for Pesach. Baking dishes, okay? Baking dishes would also require libun chamur. You make cookies. There's direct absorption from the cookies, no medium of heat, into the walls of the baking dish. You would have to blowtorch it. That's likely going to ruin it. You might as well just buy a new one. They cost 20, 30 shekel. Get them at the store, get a baking dish. You know, that's, you know, new one for Pesach. You could have it from year to year. Let's talk about ovens. Okay. Ovens is a very big topic. So I just want to see actually, by show of hands, give me a thumbs up if you have a self-cleaning oven. Thumbs up if you have a self-cleaning oven. Okay. I'm just curious. Anyone have a self-cleaning oven? Thumbs up if you have a self-cleaning oven. Okay. Thumbs down if you do not have a self-cleaning oven. Okay, let me see. Thumbs down if you do not have a self-cleaning oven. Let me see. Okay, so we have a mix. Some people have self-cleaning ovens. Some people do not. So here's what we're going to do in terms of ovens. Okay, if you have a self-cleaning oven, it's very simple. You do not need to do anything but turn on the oven to the self-cleaning option, okay, and let it go to the highest heat. And it gets to 700-800 degrees, whatever it is. Everything, every crisp of chametz will be totally burnt. Okay, and this is no joke. If you were to put a piece of a wooden spoon into the self-cleaning oven, at the time that it's on, it will burn to a crisp. Okay, it will burn to ashes. Okay, so self-cleaning destroys all forms of chametz. You do not need to do anything if you have a self-cleaning oven. Now, back in the day, before self-cleaning ovens, there was a machloka between 20th century rabbanim. Rav Moshe Feinstein felt that you needed to blowtorch an oven or put an oven box in. Well, good luck for anybody to find an oven box today. Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Soloveitchik of Eider believed that, you know, again, there's this opinion that whatever temperature goes into the oven, meaning the highest heat, if you don't use your oven above 300 degrees Celsius, so that's all you need a kasher at. Kibolo kach. Okay, so and this is what we do. Okay, so again, if you have a self-cleaning oven, it obliterates everything. You're totally fine. You don't need to clean it even before. Okay, you don't even need to wait 24 hours. You can just turn on the self-cleaning oven, and it's going to be kasher for Pesach. If you don't want to use a self-cleaning option because it creates fumes in the house or it's dangerous with kids around, so let's talk about a non-self-clean option. And you're going to run the self-cleaning option just like a non-self-cleaning oven. So let's say you have a regular oven that does not have self-cleaning. In this case, you need to clean it thoroughly. And then you put it on the highest setting for 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it is. Get it to the highest setting. And that's what you can do for a non-self-clean oven. So it entails a little bit more work. You got to clean it. This is a good way to teach your kids about Pesach by having them clean the oven. There are some cleaners that are special specifically to get off gook in the oven. And this is going to be better than blowtorching your whole oven. If some people want to blowtorch their oven, by all means, you're welcome to. But again, at your own risk. But you could you could kosher your non-self-cleaning oven. You just need to clean it out before and then put it at the highest temperature. Let's talk about the oven racks. In terms of the oven racks, if you don't want to leave in there, let's say you have a self-cleaning cycle, you may not want to leave in the racks. You know, then what you could do is you leave them in for an hour with a non-self-cleaning cycle, okay? And that's also recommended to cover the racks with aluminum, especially if you're using aluminum foil dishes, then you should definitely cover them with aluminum. If you have your own, Pesach baking trays, you probably don't need to cover the racks, okay? I'm going to take questions now on what I just did right now. So yes, yay for self-cleaning ovens. Let's go. Okay, my oven is a Breville small oven. Is it kosherable for passive reuse, or is it considered like a toaster oven and not kosherable? So I don't know so much about a Breville. Does it have a self-cleaning option? Let's talk about that privately. We'll talk about that. I'm just, 1 second. Oh, okay, fine. Sorry, I'm just going to go back up a little bit. What about glass bowl used for salads or a glass jug? So it's a glass bowl that's never used for heat. Again, there's no transfer of or absorption of chametz into the walls. Just clean it out. And you'd be able to use it if you know for sure that you never used it for something hot. But again, Ashkenazim tend to be stringent about all glass on Pesach. However, again, I think the glass bowl can be treated just like a glass jug, as long as you know that you're not using it at all for heat. If it's really just for salad and it's cold, it should be fine as well to just clean it out and use it. Okay, I think in a self-cleaning ovens, you are meant to remove the racks, so those still need to be kashered. Okay, thank you, Matthew, for pointing that out. Again, you don't want the racks to get ruined, but you can in a self-cleaning oven. You can use the rack, put the racks in at the regular high temperature, 400 degrees, 300 degrees Celsius, whatever it is, for an hour. You clean them beforehand, and then they'll be kashered. Can you leave the trays in the oven when self-cleaning? Again, I don't want anyone to have any problems with their racks, anything to get destroyed. Matthew seems to suggest that you're not able to, so one should definitely be careful. Again, you could run the hottest regular cycle, and that's how you kosher the racks. And also, again, recommended to probably to cover the racks as well. What about an electric hob? We'll get to that in a second. We use baking soda in our oven, and it cleans it beautifully, non-toxic and simple. I like that idea. Thank you for sharing that. Do you need to leave the oven for 24 hours after cleaning before heating it? Yes. Thank you, Leanne, for pointing that out. If you are koshering your oven, okay, and you're not using the self-cleaning cycle, if you're koshering a regular oven, you need to wait 24 hours. Again, everything needs to be ta'am pagum in order to then be able to kosher it. Okay, how long should oven be on highest heat for? There are different opinions. Let's say an hour. Put it on for an hour. That's my answer to Samuel Schwartz. Put it on for an hour. Our oven turns itself off on the highest setting after 15 minutes. Can we keep turning it back on? You could try turning it back on. If not, then you could go with what you have. Highest setting is sufficient, but see if there's a way to keep it on for a longer period of time. Okay. Self-cleaning ovens generally allow the racks to be left in place and cleaned at the same time. So that's a different opinion. We have a machloket here between Karen Davidoff and Matthew Fisher. And okay, you guys should work it out between yourselves. Find out what works for your ovens. Again, I don't want anything to get ruined. Ellie Harris has a question. What's your... maybe just write into the chat if you don't mind. It's easier to do it there. Do you have to clean the racks so there are no burnt bits on them? Again, self-cleaning option, you do not have to. For a non-self-cleaning option, you have to clean the racks. Correct. You could use baking soda or, intensive dishwashing stuff. Why need to cover glass with foil if you heat it in the manner you mentioned? I'm not sure what that's referring to, covering glass with foil. So Samuel Schwartz, if you could just clarify what...
The racks.
The racks with foil. If you heat in the manner you mentioned, so some are machmer if you're using aluminum, because aluminum, whatever. Some are a little bit more stringent about it if you have aluminum. But if you have your own Pesach baking trays, you don't have to. Okay, how clean does it not? Yeah. To someone, how clean does a non-self-cleaning oven have to be? It should be as clean as possible. Do a good job on the oven. I recognize it's not easy to clean an oven, but again, this is the this is a great punishment for kids. Or I should say that positively, this is a great way to teach them about, you know, working hard to get ready for Pesach. You do the best you can. You do the best you can, and then you put on the highest setting. Okay, we clean our racks by soaking in a bathtub with laundry detergent, non-toxic and simple. Okay, if that works. And that gets off all the gook and all the ashes, whatever it is. So that's very good. What about metal grates on stovetop? We're going to get there in just a little bit. Okay. Good. Let's move on to the Shabbos, the blech, and the plata. Okay. So in terms of you have an electric plata. Okay. What you do for this is, there might be food that spills. Whatever it is, something might fall on it. There may be a blia with direct, which requires the boot. Now, again, we go by the highest temperature that this gets to. So what you do is you clean the hot plate, you leave it for 24 hours, okay, and then you turn it on for an hour, and then you cover with tinfoil. Four things for electrical hot plate. Clean, leave for 24 hours, turn on for an hour, and then cover with tinfoil, and you may use it on Pesach. If you have a blech that you use on the fire that gets, those metal sheets that get direct exposure to the fire, that you would need to do libun gamur on, and that will probably get ruined. You have to use a blowtorch. You could do it. You may not care. Again, you have to have a blowtorch. You have to be able to do this safely. Not necessarily recommended. Okay, let's talk about the stovetop. Okay, now the stovetop is. So there are different types of stovetops. There are, gas stovetops, there's electrical, there's induction. So first of all, let's talk about the chatzuvot. The chatzuvot are the grates that hold up the food, okay? Now, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't even mention that you need a kasher these things, okay? Because we assume that anything that falls on them burns right away. I mean, the fire is right under the chatzuvot. Under the grate. So, we don't even distinguish between dairy and meat. Anything that falls on it, we assume is burned right away. Nothing is going to get absorbed. However, the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, Paskins for Ashkenazim, that stovetop grates need libun. They need burning, okay? Because, pasta may have fallen on it, or chametz may have fallen on it, okay? This is a very big, the Mishnah Brurah says explicitly, this is a very big chumrah. Because we don't assume that things are going to get transferred when there's no liquid medium, and also the pasta burns right away when it falls on the grate. So many assume that this is a chumra special for Pesach, and what they say about the Ramah is that you need to do libun kal, but not libun chamor. Libun chamor is when you have sparks flying, hot red. I mean, it's really boiling hot. Libun kal is again hot enough that a piece of paper would burn on something. So how do you do this? How do you kasher your stovetop? There are a few different options, okay? Rav Avadia says for Sfaradim, you could do Hagalah on them. Okay, that's for Sfaradim. But a classic option for Ashkenazim is to turn on the burner for 30 minutes. Don't do them all at the same time. Do one at a time, otherwise you could ruin your burner, your stovetop. So you turn one on, clean it, and turn it on for 30 minutes. And again, this is a form of Libun Kal. You don't need to wait 24 hours, okay? Or you could put a piece of metal on top and let it burn for 10 minutes. It gets much hotter, okay? So 30 minutes after you cleaned it, or you can put it on for 10 minutes with a piece of metal sheet on top. Okay, and this is indeed what we do. Another option is to take the metal grates and put them in the oven when you kasher the oven. Put the oven on high for half an hour, and that will also kasher the grates, the chatzuvot. Obviously if you put them into a self-cleaning oven, that will for surely, take care of everything, that will cover all bases. Again, if you want to put things into a self-cleaning oven in between the stovetop, okay, the metal in between, that should be covered. Okay. Just in general, by the way, on your stovetop, we assume that everything that touches a stovetop during the year is chazer, it's treif, okay, because you have meat and milk falling onto there and they're mixing together and they're not getting burnt up by the fire. So that area between the grates, that should be covered. We never kasher that part, and that's what we do in that regard, okay? I'm just going to take, I want to go through a few more different types of stovetops, and then I will take questions on this issue. So if you have a, uh, an electrical element we just spoke about, a gas element we just spoke about what you need to do. If you have an electrical element, clean it well, leave it on long enough until it goes, you know, very hot red. And then if you can cover in between, you know, cover in between. Okay. If you, you know, as electrical elements, usually, I guess, metal in between. So you should be able to cover for a glass stovetop. Okay. That's electric. Now there's a whole issue with this because, you know, everyone agrees that you kosher the burners by putting them in the highest setting. The problem is the space in between. There's a concern that if you pour, you know, hot water onto it, or, you know, there could be a problem. So the suggestion is as follows. Practical suggestion is to clean the stovetop well, boil water from a kettle and pour, you know, pour irui in between the burners, and then turn on high once it cools until they grow red. Okay, so you're pouring water in between on the glass stovetop. That will kosher the stuff in between, let it cool down. Then you turn on the burners until it grows red, and then you don't use a glass. Don't use a glass for the rest of Pesach. Okay. What about an induction stovetop? I'm just curious. Does anybody here have an induction stovetop? Can I just see by show of hands induction stovetops? Anybody? Fingers up if you have an induction stovetop. Okay. This doesn't seem to be the most favorite type of stovetop. But at least now, but induction stovetops, you have to, you know, you wet the top of the top, okay? And then you take a steel pot with water and you let it boil over, okay? So the water is coming out after you heat up the water, and the pot will heat up and transfer heat to the glass top also, okay? And so this is the way to essentially to kosher it. The area between the burners that does not get hot, you know, can be koshered by pouring water on it. But basically, you're going to kosher the top of the induction by having water pour out from a boiling pot of water on top of your stove. Okay, I'm going to take questions on this section now before I move on. Okay, metal grates on the stovetop. Debbie's from Debbie's iPad. We've answered that question. Can you kosher cooking trays and other libun vessels in the oven, assuming this is libun chamur? That's a good question. I think only in a self-cleaning oven. I think the answer, Yaron, to your question, I will confirm this with you, but I think only in a self-cleaning oven, you would have to do it. Whereas in a regular oven, it would not be hot enough. Okay. So just another, I will get back to that question. And Gary Wayne asked, what about koshering a barbecue? We're going to get to that in just a little bit. Okay, we're moving to the end of this list. What about a warming draw? Okay, for those who have a warming draw, some, by the way, are against koshering it. The Starkey, an organization in America, is against koshering it because they says, you can never get to you know, high enough heating to constitute libun. But the CRC and other organizations suggest that you should do as follows. Okay, listen carefully. You take one of those sterno cans. Sterno cans are those lights that they put under sometimes when you have hot food at a simcha. So you have hot food at a brit milah, the sterno can, you put that in the warming draw. You leave the warming draw slightly ajar, so there'll be enough air to allow for combustion. And you leave it there for whatever it is, you know, an hour, 2 hours, let it burn through. And obviously this is after you've cleaned it out, not used it for 24 hours, and that will kosher the warming draw, and you may then use your warming draw on Pesach. Okay, let's talk about microwaves quickly, and then we're going to get to barbecues. In terms of a microwave, microwave works through steam, okay? So how do you kosher a microwave? You clean it well, you wait 24 hours, and then you take a cup of hot water, you put it in, you let it steam, and that will clean the microwave. In terms of the dish itself, you may not use a dish on Pesach. That's used for heat. That's glass. Ashkenazim do not use this on Pesach. And all you need to do, you put it in for 5, 7, 10 minutes, whatever is until the cup essentially boils out. Make sure that the cup that you use is not going to shatter in the microwave. Now let's talk about a barbecue. Okay, now I've seen two different opinions about a barbecue, but let me just caution you that many are wary about koshering a barbecue on Pesach, and the best solution is to buy a little hibachi, you know, and to use that on Pesach, where you get a grill pan and you could sort of make, you know, hamburgers on it. It's pretty good as well. So one opinion is that you really should not, you really are not able to kasher a barbecue on Pesach. Why? Because you need libun gamur. You need, you know, you need a kasher every part of your barbecue with a blowtorch, because you have to get out all the gook and all the stuff and all the oil that, that's stuck to the, throughout the thing. And you're never going to get rid of everything. And you may destroy your barbecue with a blowtorch, especially if you have a good, nice one. And, you know, so if you want a barbecue for Pesach, according to this opinion, you should just go and buy a another one. Or you could buy a George Foreman, by the way. I don't know if they have those in Israel. They probably do. You know, it's like those sandwich makers for meat, and they're electric. And you could also have a really good burger that way. This is opinion number one, that you're never really going to be able to kasher a barbecue. Now, I did see on the Star-K website, someone sent this to me. The Star-K website suggests that you can kasher a barbecue. And I'm actually going to put it on the chat so that everyone can see exactly what the Star-K says. Okay. And you could read it, read through it. 1 second. 1 second. Control. Give me 1 second. I'm just going to write to everyone. Okay, this is what the Star-K says, that, you know, you have to go through this whole process. Again, you have to be very careful, because you're essentially using a blowtorch on your fire. If you want to follow this directive, one is welcome to do that. But be careful, you know, this is at your own risk, and it may just be easier to get a hibachi or to buy one of those George Foreman electric grills, or to, you know, to use a grill pan on the stovetop, which is what we do. And that's definitely an option as well. Okay, so the last thing we're just going to talk about, this is the last object, is a frying pan. Frying pans, you know, there's a discussion about frying pans, whether you, there's oil or not. Is there a medium here? Because sometimes you use oil, sometimes things get sort of stuck to the bottom of the pan. By the way, Teflon pans definitely cannot be kashered, because they would need, you'd have to burn them and it would essentially destroy them. So we're concerned you're not going to do it properly. You know, if you really need to kasher a frying pan, I would say talk to me directly about it. You could, it's easiest to just buy a frying pan for Pesach, have it for Pesach. That's my recommendation. But if you want to kasher it, be in touch with me. We could speak about the best way to do it. Okay, let's get back to some of these questions. Okay, so we spoke about kashering a barbecue. Okay, where do you get Sterno cans here? I'm not sure, but I imagine the supermarket. The pot you use to kasher the induction oven or cup and microwave, are these regular dishes or Pesach dishes? The answer is they could be either one. As long as it's a dish that you didn't use for 24 hours, you could use a non-Pesach dish. If you want to be stringent and use a Pesach dish, that's fine, but you do not have to. Can Sfaradim use a glass dish in the microwave? The answer is yes. But it needs to be cleaned. Just make sure there's nothing on it. Can Sfaradim use a plate in the microwave? The answer is yes. Okay. Can you not just turn over the trays and turn on the guests directly on the plates? Isn't that libun? This is referring to, what is this referring to, Simon? Is this referring to the grates, the chatzuvot on the stovetop? Just get back to me on that. Okay. Let's, so we've done a microwave. Another thing that you should be aware of that needs to be changed for Pesach, you can just clean your dish towels. Oven mitts should be swapped for special Pesach ones. Blenders and mixers are a bit problematic, as well as sieves. These are very hard to get everything off of. If you really don't have another option, that you could clean out your blender and your mixer very well and all the cracks. You may need to even open it up a little bit, get rid of everything. If you only use it for cold, non-spicy items, it shouldn't be a problem. But if you're using it for heat or for chametz, you then have to do hagalah. You'd have to put it into to heat. Okay, so, okay. That is the end of this this presentation. Does anybody have any other questions that they want to put on the side? So Matthew writes, everyone, or get one of the long, large size Yom Hatzmut type barbecues for Pesach. That's what I do. Works great. Fantastic. Why can't you use a glass tray plate and a microwave? You said okay to use glass cups this year. So fair question from Gray. The answer is as follows. Because a dish in the microwave is usually used for heat. And there is a concern that there is absorption through heat. Whereas for a cold, a cup is most of the time used for cold, then it's not used for chametz, and therefore for a cup you can be a little bit more lenient. Glass cups have cold. Microplates goes hot. Yes, exactly. That's exactly the difference, Matthew. Yisher koach. Okay, screenshot from Simon Cohn. Oh, you're referring to the trays in the barbecue. See the picture. Okay, let's download this. Desktop. Okay, save. Okay. Open file. Let me just see this 1 second. Yeah, those things. So the problem is that kashering those things is insufficient because, you know, there's all this chametz that gets under it as well. You know, that's the concern that if you look under these things, there's all this chametz and you'd have to blowtorch that area. But again, you could go by the Star K recommendations if you're interested.
But doesn't turning them over and putting them directly onto the flame, isn't that the same as libun?
Well, but it I'm not sure. To be honest, I'm not sure in terms of that. But again, it's all the stuff under that needs to get cooked. You know, let's say you can kasher those things. I mean, the Star K does address this. You know, you still have to kasher all the different parts of the grill besides for just the the trays or the you know the grill part itself. Can we kasher strainers? It's hard to kasher strainers. Because it's hard to clean everything out from it. If you've only used it for cold and you never use it for chametz, I'd say it's not a problem. But it is ideal to get a you know strainer specifically for Pesach. You do not have to cover the grates themselves from Avidobi. You do not have to cover the grates themselves in the gas hob. You have you should cover in between with tinfoil. Can one use a glass serving dishes by soaking for three dishes, 3 days, changing the water every single day? Again, not ideal because they've been used for hot and on Pesach Ashkenazim are very stringent about glass on Pesach. So I'm going to recommend that it be a no, if it's a sharat chak, if you really have no other options. I mean, if you don't, let's say you can't get access to tin, aluminum, whatever it is, we could talk about this more privately. What about kashering knives? Is this possible? Okay. So kashering knives is a challenging issue because knives, first of all, there's the handle. There's the where the screws go in. Food can get caught in there. There's serrated knives. It's generally recommended not to kasher knives for Pesach. So if you can manage to get hold of new knives for Pesach, that's going to be my recommendation. If you're not able to do that, please be in touch with me, and we could talk through what your options are. What about glass pot covers? Again, if it's only used for cold, okay, you know, or drinking cups, fine, but covers which are used for heat is a problem unless you're Sfaradi. Can you kasher pots that have a stone coating like marble or granite? Yes, you can. Marble and granite can be kashered, just not clay. If it's an all metal knife, can do with Haggala. Yes, you should be able to do Haggala with an all metal knife. If it's like one piece, you're saying there's no handle there. You may also want to just also, if you have a blowtorch, you know, blowtorch the. You know what? I want to take a look at that. I don't want to answer without without going over. I didn't take a good look at knives today, so I need to take another look. I will get back to you, Ami. Okay, Tov. What we're going to do now is very quickly go to the kitchen. Okay, and in the kitchen, we're going to do. I'm going to do a quick tutorial on Haggalah, and you could see how I'm going to do the countertop and et cetera. And so if anyone has, this is what we're going to go do right now. I'm going to, I'm just going to turn on the Zoom onto my phone for a second so that I could access this same class on Zoom on my phone. It'll be much easier. 613, by the way, all the shift day events are 613-1234. 613, whoever picked that number, brilliant. Okay. Okay. Join with audio. Okay. And I'm actually just, I've prepared this.
Let me just get my, my Bluetooth headset, and then I'll be able to do this in the kitchen with no problem. 1 second. Okay. Okay, can everybody
Can everybody see me?
Rabbi, your picture just no, it was frozen. Now it's unfrozen. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
And the sound off in your room on the computer in your room.
Yeah. Is that all right now? Can everybody
perfect
see me?
Perfect.
Hear you and see you.
You can see me and hear. Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay. Good. That's still recording.
Good. Okay.
Let's go
into the kitchen. Okay. Now, my wonderful wife is going to be the videographer here. Okay. So, why don't you? Good. Can everybody see me here? Yeah? Okay. Tough. What do we have here? We have in our kitchen. By the way, our kitchen is not this clean. Just make it very, very clear. And I just want to be, I'm very proud. I know my kitchen very well. I do the dishes. I cook all the time. But I feel it's also my kitchen. Okay, good. So let's look at here. Okay, we've gone through a number of different things. We have the pot, boiling pot here. I'm just going to put on a glove to make sure that this is going to be, and I'm putting this on. So this is the pot that we're going to use for Hagala. Okay, you can see right here. And let's say, for example, I want to kosher.
If you want to see it.
I want to kosher this.
If you want to see it.
Okay. Metal knife.
I don't think we need to
make sure that I've not used this for 24 hours. And that's clean.
This has to be something you have to use for 24 hours.
Can you hear me?
Can we come closer? Closer, thank you.
Keep going back to the old photo. One second, I'm just going to turn off.
Can I suggest everybody clicks mute? Can I suggest everybody hits mute?
Yeah. Everybody click mute.
I'm just going to turn off the video here. Okay, stop video.
I'm going to mute this as well. Okay. Can everybody, is that better now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, do it then. Okay, so we have the pot here. This has been boiling. It's boiling water. Okay, there are those who recommend strongly to throw some soap into the pot when you do Hagala. And you really want to make sure that this is boiling. This is not as hot as it should be. Okay, but take a look at this. You can see it needs to boil. Really needs to be boiling. And let's say we have this knife. Okay, I checked, we didn't use this for 24 hours, and we cleaned it. Okay, I take it, and I stick it inside the pot. All I need to do then is pull it out, and it is considered kosher for Pesach. Okay, so I'm going to pull it out. Again, you have to be careful, this could be dangerous. So I'm pulling this out, okay, and then this is kosher for Pesach. Again, ideal to put it under cold water, and this is good to go. Can everybody still hear me?
Rabbi, the tongs that you used to pull it out, were those kosher lePesach tongs, or does it matter?
These are not kosher lePesach tongs, but again, you can if you have not used this in 24 hours and it's clean, you can use it. Okay, it's not a problem.
Rabbi, what do you do when you have something which is larger than the pot? So if you have a knife which is 30 centimeters long, but the water is only 20 centimeters deep, can you do the top half and then turn it over and do the other half?
So yes, exactly. This is the difference between tefillat kelim and hachsharat kelim. Tefillat kelim needs to go in immersed in the mikvah all at once. Okay. Same thing is true when a isha who is nidash, she has to go in the mikvah all at once. Okay. Whereas hachsharat kelim, I can do part of the knife. Let's say it only goes until here. I do part of the knife, Then I turn it over and I do the second part of the knife. And that is sufficient. Okay? So you can do this in parts. Hachsharat kelim, hagalat kelim can be done in parts. Now, just to other examples, okay? We spoke about doing plastic, okay? You can do hachsharat kelim with in plastic here, okay? This is plastic. You can do this in. You can throw this in as well, okay? You could do hagalat kelim with plastic. Now, let's talk. We also spoke about just going through some of the objects. We spoke about the lid of the burn. We happen to sometimes put chametz or a kugel on top on Pesach and during Shabbos. So this would have to be kashrut as well. You know, you could do it in parts. So this is an example of something that doesn't fit into this pot, but it could fit in. So I did half, and now I'm doing the second half. Okay, and that's how you do this this piece here. Now, let's talk about the countertops, the best way to do it. So I boiled this. Okay, we saw this was boiling hot. This the electric kettle. Okay, you can see right now. And I'm going to show you how I'm going to do Hagalah on the countertops. Okay, so this is very hot, and one needs to be very, very careful when one is doing this. Okay, so I'm just going to show you one example, one spot in the kitchen. Okay, so this is all clean. I have to make sure I have not used this spot with heat in the last 24 hours. And then I try to pour on every single spot. So you want to have direct pouring onto each spot of the kitchen. See, that's how I'm doing the countertop. That every spot gets. It is messy. You have to use towels. You have to make sure the kids cannot be seen. And this is, for example, so this area right here, assuming it was cleaned, assuming it wasn't used for heat for 24 hours, this area would be kosher for Pesach. The same thing you have to do with the sink. You're going over every single, you know, part of the sink with a direct water. Okay, you want to make sure that it hits every single point of the sink. Again, you're doing the you're doing the whole faucet, you know, and on top. Okay, you'd have to do this whole area as well, etc. So this is how you kosher the sink and the countertops. Let's go just through another, few things. Fridge, you're going to clean out. We spoke about that requires shtifa. We spoke about oven, differences between self-cleaning and cleaning ovens, regular cleaning ovens. We spoke about the toaster. Get rid of the toaster. This is a problem to kasher. Sponges, you definitely want to get different sponges for Pesach. Just some other things that come up here. Brooms, you definitely want to clean out the brooms and make sure that they are clean. And that they do not have any chametz particles in them. Stovetop. Let's take a look at the stovetop. Again, we'll take these are the chatzuvot. Okay. We could put these on here for, okay, after cleaning this. Okay. I could keep this on for 30 minutes like this, or if I would like to do it a little bit faster, I could get a baking tray. Okay, I'm going to just pull out a baking tray here. Of course I know what I'm doing. Okay, baking tray. I put it over here, and then the whole thing should take 10 minutes because it's going to get a lot hotter with a pot on top. Again, you have to be very careful. Use gloves and be careful. And then the area in between is an area that we are going to cover with tinfoil, but not actually on the flame, the hob itself. Okay. We spoke about the urn. You do hagalah on the urn by cleaning it out. You got to clean out the limestone, the lime, the residue. Clean it out first, and then you fill it up all the way to the top. Let it even boil over a little bit, and then you let it come through the spout, and that will kosher it. What are some other? Okay, so in the dishwasher, we spoke about the dishwasher. You have to clean out the dishwasher very well. You really need to take apart all the different parts, etc., in the dishwasher. Clean it. Put it on the highest setting. Don't use it for 24 hours. And so this is our short tutorial in the kitchen. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, I'm just going to go, let's see. Okay. Does anybody have questions? Let me just pull up these questions. Okay, not sure how to get to the chat here. Okay, so questions. I'm just putting on the Bluetooth again. For some reason, the Bluetooth is not working so well. Wait, you know, can someone talk and just to see that the Bluetooth is working?
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Okay, it's working. Good. Okay. Is there a minimum amount of time the cutlery needs to be immersed in the boiling water? No, you do not need to. It just needs to go in and out. It doesn't need to be a long period of time. Makeup and toiletries. So I'm going to do a Q&A session this coming Sunday night. But just generally, makeup and toiletries. Do you know anybody who eats makeup or eats toiletries? I don't know anybody who does. I don't know any dogs who do. And therefore, you don't have to be concerned that there's chametz in any of your shampoo or in any of your medicines or in any of your toiletries. Medicines that have taste. Medicines that have taste can be a problem. However, all other medicines, it's not a problem. No one eats their medicine. They digest their medicine for medicinal reasons. What about kettles? Same as urn. The kettle is same as the urn. You could let it sort of, you know, boil over and, exactly same as the urn. Clarify the glass dish in the microwave. So if you're Sfaradi, you could use the glass dish in the microwave. Ashkenazim do not use any glass on Pesach that was used during the year. However, there's one exception, and that is drinking glasses. For drinking glasses, non-whiskey, non-beer drinking glasses, you can use this Pesach. Okay, and again, I'm making a little bit more of an exception this year because it's harder. It's hard to just go out and buy these types of things. Many people don't have them in the house. What about a kitchen hood? What is a kitchen? You mean the kitchen hood? Like, I'm not sure what that is. That like the stove thing on top of the stove? Please clarify. Toothpaste. Recommended that you get a tube of toothpaste that is to share at the Pesach. You can definitely find it in the supermarket. There are some who are lenient because people don't generally eat toothpaste. But some are, you know, it's good to have a new tube of toothpaste. We have a granite counter. Is a hot water necessary? The hot water is not necessary if you're planning on covering it. If you're going to cover it, you do not need to put hot water down. Otherwise, you do. Okay, so with this, we are going to conclude our making Pesach simple. I'm just coming back to the computer. I hope that this is helped everybody here
in some way, shape, or form. And please God, we should all have a chag kasher v'sameach. If you have any other questions, please be in touch. More than happy to answer them. It's been great learning with you. And I just want to first of all say, please, everyone should be safe and healthy. We should have a geulah shleima. The redemption should come this year. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect us, just like He protects us. Leil Shivurim. Everyone should be in good health, especially those at the front lines. Our medical professionals who are Mosrim Nasham every single day on behalf of Am Yisrael. So please, God, everything should go well this year, and the redemption, the geulah shleima should come. So Kol Tov, everybody. Make sure to include your kids in this. This should not just be on your shoulders. Your kids should be involved in all of this. And we look forward to celebrating Pesach together with you, even though we will be a little bit separate. And just to mention, there will be some programs coming up this coming Sunday night, how to run a Seder, ideas for your Siddur, and I've got an insight, and there will be a Q&A session this coming Sunday night on any other Pesach questions that you have. That's it for now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and if you have any other questions, of course. Okay. Sure, I'll provide my email. .com.